These are the Target Files, taking a 21st century look back at the 20th century adventures of the Doctor in novelization and audiobook form, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, there's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time. For 40 years, Professor Travers Yeti has been quiet, a collector's item in a museum. Then, without warning, it awakes and savagely murders. Patches of mist begin to appear in central London. Those who linger in it are found dead, their faces smothered in cobwebs. When the Doctor, Jamie and Victoria arrive in the London Underground, they find that the web is remorselessly spreading. What's more, hordes of Yeti are roaming the misty streets and cobwebbed tunnels, killing everyone in their path. London has been gripped tight in a web of fear. The Doctor and his friends unite with the army, led by one Colonel Lethbridge Stewart, in defense of planet Earth. But an old enemy is lurking in the shadows.
Hello, this is the Target Files, and this is Alex and Exeter, and this week we are going to be discussing The Web of Fear, book by Terence Dix, and also audiobook read by David Troughton. Hi, this is Alex in Exeter.
And this is Mike in Swansea. So, looking at The Web of Fear, a very recent release of this story that... which five parts came back to from the missing archives a few years ago. Overall thoughts, really, on what you've made of this release?
Well, it's a very interesting one, because I listened to the audiobook and read the book and watched the DVD with the missing episodes, which are looking very good. If you've got a 4K Ultra Player, they look very good on that. And I think it's a very good idea, but I just think it gets a bit stretched out in some bits. So I don't know if it completely works on TV. I thought it worked in the book.
Right, yeah. I think I enjoyed both stories. Six episodes on television, written by Mervyn Haseman was one of the writers, and the other gentleman's name was Henry Lincoln. Initially shown in 1968, and five episodes recovered from Nigeria, a TV relay station there, by Philip Morris back in 2013, and released on DVD with no extras, sadly, shortly afterwards. But I would go along with that, Al. I think it probably does work better on the page. I think the scope and the cinematography in the early episodes are so well directed, but I think it's perhaps more suited to the novel format.
I think it looks really good. And the first two episodes were really fantastically shot, and the whole scariness of the underground. But I think it then sort of ends up with a lot of going around in the same circles in the later sort of three episodes of the thing. And that's why I think it works slightly more better on in the book, I think, personally. I think Terrence Dix has done a good edit of the book and made it a bit more coherent, I think, in some bits.
Yes, interesting early change to the novel. They've missed out the cliffhanger on TV from Enemy of the World, which was the story broadcast before, where there's a bit of trouble going on in the TARDIS and the Doctor has to realign it. But the first time we meet the Second Doctor's TARDIS team of Jamie and Zoe, they are discussing what has enchanted and entranced the TARDIS, aren't they, to arrive on Earth. As we later find out, it is the Great Intelligence.
I thought it was quite interesting where both the book and the TUS have sort of different beginnings and different endings. And I thought the ending worked slightly better in the book version to the TV version.
Pretty character-heavy, a lot of characterisation, really, due, as you said, to the conditions of being within the London Underground. A lot of characters involved in this one. Which are the memorable ones that stood out for you?
I think the memorable ones are definitely Colonel Lethbridge-Stewart, unless he becomes Brigadier later on, and I think Evans stands out a lot, though, even though he's a stereotype for most of it. I think he's quite, you know, comes to his own in the end. And I quite like the way that Fraser Hines' Jamie is very good in that form. I like bits from the Doctor, so it's all round it works out quite well.
Yes, quite a frantic start, really. We have Professor Travers, played by, sadly just passed away, Deborah Watling's Father Jack, returning in this story. Playing the character 30 years later, he played in The Abominable Snowman. He seems quite frantic, doesn't he, in the TV version. Do you feel that comes across better in the text? Do you feel Dix writes him as a little bit more measured throughout?
I think so, because he's very sort of, bluff and stereotypical sort of professor in the TV version, where in the book he's more sort of mannered and more sort of sympathetic to both Victoria and his daughter, I thought.
The famous man himself, Colonel Lethbridge-Stewart at the time, who gave rise to the Brigadier, returning Nicholas Courtney for the role in the Invasion story later, and then became a stalwart, regular appearer in the Pertwee era. But he's slightly more measured in this display, isn't it? It's almost like he is trying to suss out the Doctor throughout. You've got that sort of inquisitive nature, whereas the Brigadier is quite sort of, I suppose, bombastic and seen as slightly more of a buffoon in the later Pertwee era.
It's definitely a different performance to what you get through the Pertwee era. It's more learning the character and sort of becoming sort of Brigadier in this, I think. And I think it works very well. But I think the way he's introduced in the book is slightly better than he is introduced in the TV episode, because he just sort of appears in the TV book, in the TV episode with the Doctor, where in the book you get a good sort of backstory to his characters. I think that worked better, definitely, in the book.
Yes, this was written in 1976, 8 years after the TV broadcast. So Terrence Dix then had the hindsight of the era which he had written for, and the whole UNIT family, and the prominence the Brigadier had during that period. And he actually alludes to their future relationship. It's a very interesting sort of writing device, isn't it? He alludes to famous adventures which will take place in the Doctor's future and the Brigadier's future, such as the Auton invasion.
There's definitely the whole sort of history to come sort of thing in the book, and that works well. But I know there's a lot of, you know, we know there's people who love Terrence Dix, but do you think this is one of the books that does start to paint by numbers? Definitely, I think sometimes with the chapters, the way they're laid out on that.
I'd say to a certain extent, but it does keep a good pace for me. He does manage to balance the character moments with the heavier action moments. I think he writes action really well, the sort of climactic battles with the web guns from the Yetis and the regular artillery and the explosives from the soldiers.
Yeah, I think they are some of the best bits in the book, and definitely on TV, the whole sort of action scenes with the what would, you know, later become UNIT, but sort of, you know, the colonels, you know, group of soldiers who are down in the tunnels, it it does look brilliant on the screen, and it's very well described.
Yeah, and so great that he went on to become a stalwart, of course. And so sad, really, that when the recoveries of the episodes were made in Nigeria in the 50th anniversary year, 2013, episode 3, apparently, well, the story goes that Philip Morris, the episode hunter, went to initially make his inquiries where he found these film cans, and he said Web of Fear, episode 3, was there then. But then he returned sometime later. He says he spoke to the manager of the Nigerian TV station, who said he knew nothing about Web of Fear, episode 3. So something's gone on there, and we can only hope that we get to see the great Nick Courtney's first appearance someday.
Oh, is that why on the DVD that you don't see the sort of first scenes between the Doctor and the Colonel? Is that why they're not there?
Yes, it's a telesnap recreation. Yeah, it's just so disappointing, that, isn't it, that we haven't got the full story back. Very grateful as we are to Phil Morris for those 5 episodes and the whole of The Enemy of the World, which preceded this story returning.
Oh, definitely, because that's another really great story as well, and they look beautiful. It's just interesting because Nick, we know Nick Courtney's performance just gets better and better over the years. It can be a bit weird by the end of John Pertwee, where it's a bit more buffoonish. Well, this performance is great when he's sort of first getting to know the character, and it gets even better in Invasion, which is really good with him.
Yes, one I look forward to reviewing with you sometime soon, I hope. Ian Marta wrote that one for Target, I think, and it's out as an audiobook now.
Yeah, it definitely is out. We must do that at some point, because it's a very good I think they've got all the episodes about DVD. I think I've got that.
Yes, returning to characters, Al, you didn't mention him earlier, Private Evans. I want to speak in some detail about him, really. A few episodes back, we looked at Delta and the Bannermen, and you brought up the question of Welsh stereotypes, which were seen in a pretty much a positive manner in that story, the enthusiasm of Burton, the camp manager, and Rachel Griffiths, the sidekick, the unrequited love story. We have Private Evans in this scene, more or less. Really, he's got a strange character arc for me, because sort of halfway through, I was at the start, right from his first words, and then halfway through, I was thinking, what an utter and total coward this man is. But then you almost sort of come to accept it by the end. You start to sort of get a certain liking for him. He's a very, very strange character, isn't he, Al?
He's a really... Well, he's interesting, but he's very strange, because I thought Mikey's going to hate him for that whole sort of stereotypical... And the performance David Troughton does is very sort of stereotypical. And then he sort of semi, as it goes through, slightly like him more and more. And by the end, you think, well, is he the hero, really? By the end of the book and that, is he the hero, or is he just still sort of comic stereotype? And I think it sort of swings between both of them, I think.
Yeah, you just wonder how sort of utterly necessary he was to the plot. I'm trying to think what he actually does in terms of moving the plot along and helping matters out towards the end.
This is the whole thing I have with the Web of Fear, is I don't think that it's the greatest amount of plot sometimes. And I think, did you really need Courtney Evans when you had Captain Knight, who was a slightly more likable character, I thought, than Evans, and could have done all the stuff that Evans was doing with Jamie, and maybe it would have been a bit more interesting.
Yes, even though I have listened now, I can't really recall much of Captain Knight now, because I'm so sort of fixated on the representation of Evans. And thankfully...
That is the problem, because it's such a typical stereotype performance, or David Troughton does. It sort of takes you away from everybody else who's around him at the time.
Well, I listened to the last chapter on the way into work this morning in the car through the Bluetooth. And you have to remind me, Al, as I've just finished watching the last episode of the TV version again before we began recording today. Troughton refers to him at the end, when they all sort of rush the Doctor, as a blithering Welsh idiot. Now, I think they left that out of the book, didn't they?
Yeah, they left it out of the book, because the ending in the book is that... There's not that whole bit at the end of the book where you know, it's a lot quieter the way, I won't say what happens, but it's a lot quieter the way Jamie and Victoria and the Doctor go back to the TARDIS, where in the book, you know, in the TV episode, it's sort of big and everybody's saying, well done. So there's not that bit. I don't think there is that bit.
I would have been annoyed if they'd left it in the audiobook, because you have to wonder if you're talking about a nation of people, you know, why put that in there? Just call him a blithering idiot, you know, that is the sort of thing that could be found offensive. I think I can laugh it off now, being a massive Doctor Who fan and realising this is fiction, and he does come across as a blithering idiot. So, but you know, I'm glad they changed it for the book.
I think they have. I'm pretty sure that's not there. But it's like the whole problem I have with this. I think the problem I have with Weatherfield is it, in my eyes, it never sort of either gets scary or, because, well, I might find it more scary when I'm younger, but I just find it not very scary now.
Yeah, certainly filmed in a sort of atmospheric manner, Al. Apparently the production team got in trouble with London Underground because they were so convinced they had snuck into the tunnels at night and filmed it, due to how good the sets came across. The BBC nearly got in trouble through a sternly written letter about this.
Oh, well, I'm not surprised, because that first episode when they appear, Jamie and Victoria and Doctor, is very echoey. I had it on sort of Dolby setting on the hi-fi living room, and it's very echoey. You can hit every element of sort of being in that empty tube station.
On to other characters, Al. The journalist Chorley. Now, I have to say this, certainly in the TV version and in the audiobook and the novelisation, I certainly got the vibe of Austin Powers and kept expecting him to use the word groovy a lot, because he does have that sort of hold, a whole media lovey swinging 60s stereotype about him.
Oh, well, most definitely. He's there to sort of, I think, well, he's there to sort of represent the sort of time period. You know, you even say, you know, I'm from ITA, you know, because that's been set up then, sort of. He's meant to be from that time period. But I just didn't get it that, you know, he was the one who was taken, you know, but spoiler coming, he was the one who was taken over. You never know, do you? So I think he's quite fun. He's quite, you know, there to put over what the public would be thinking maybe at the time. So he is quite fun.
And Travers as well, Al. What do you feel she brings to the plot?
Well, she's interesting. She you know, brings over the whole sort of, you know, I'm not a stupid young woman, you know, I'm part of the new, you know, independent women who all, you know, are good as the men, basically, which is fantastic.
Yeah, her and Zoe, actually, pretty strong, intelligent female characters.
Definitely. I think they come over well, basically. There's that great stereotypical scene where I think Knight goes, what's a nice girl like you doing something dumb like him? She goes, oh, I always wanted to be the science.
Absolutely. Yeah, very confident. Paving the way for the likes of Caroline John there, of course, and Liz Sladen and Sarah Jane Smith a little bit further on in Doctor Who.
There's always early bits in the Troughton era, even though you still get, you know, Victoria, who's a little bit screamy. But I think there are, you know, people like Ryan Travers now, there aren't evidence that things were changing.
Yes, you mentioned him before, Al. Very, very central to this story. Good twist involving him at the end. Comes across as a very sort of brave, old-school soldier. Arnold.
Oh, yeah, Arnold, who has the great twist at the end, we won't say unless you've read it, but he comes over the sort of typical bluff soldier the whole time, who's, you know, having to keep an eye on Evans from vanishing all the time, and it worked. I think it does work, but did you really think the sort of, when they explain the twist and the Doctor goes, oh, I knew it was him all the time, did you think that worked?
Well, we always seem to give the Doctor the benefit of the doubt, don't we? It doesn't necessarily work that well as a narrative device. It all does seem a bit rushed at the end.
Yeah, that's the thing I was going to say. Do you think that whole couple, you know, last couple of chapters are a little bit rushed? Because when I watched it, I thought it felt rushed.
Spoilers wise, it's quite interesting ending to have the Yetis getting in a way, and the intervention of Jamie and the companions and the soldiers disrupting the Doctor's plan to totally get rid of the Yeti, of the intelligence.
Yeah, I think it works in some ways, because you think it's obviously been well used in recent years when we've had the great intelligence come back. But looking at it from this story, I just thought it was a bit or we've got to come up with some way of destroying the Great Intelligent. We'll just get everybody to do it.
Yes, absolutely. I'm trying to think of these. What was the solution in their prequel story to this, the Abominable Snowman?
They just blew up all the pyramids, didn't they? You know, the controlling pyramids, didn't they? Just smash all the pyramids.
Yeah, was it a similar ending, though, to do with sort of mind control and the Doctor? Did he end up...
I'm trying to think now. I think the head monk was being mind controlled by the Great Intelligent. I think by smashing all the pyramids, it led to him being freed, I think.
Yes, and talking of monks and mind control reminds me of the three-parter we had in Series 10.
Oh, most definitely. That was sort of, you know, I think it was even, as it was involving a pyramid, and it did remind me of the whole sort of Great Intelligence.
Yes, a couple of pointers towards the ending, which I think you've mentioned already, is different in this audiobook and novel, Al. Lethbridge Stewart paves the way to saying there needs to be a sort of unified intelligence task force set up, which sort of gives birth to UNIT. I think, did UNIT appear first of all in The Invasion the next time he appeared?
Yeah, The Invasion's the first thing, because he's got, you know, when they meet him again, he's gone from corporal to brigadier, hasn't he, by then? So I think the UNIT has been set up by then.
Isn't there an earlier, maybe Arnold speaking earlier on, or it may be the Colonel Lethbridge Stewart again, who actually mentions there being a countermeasures team, and that's very evocative. I wonder if that's where they got the idea for Remembrance of the Daleks from, and the countermeasures, of course, have their own Big Finish spin-off.
Yeah, I have to admit, I didn't notice that, but I think there was a line to do with countermeasures and sort of, you know, people were, the reason they were down there originally, so that's probably where that did come from.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is Who's News. This is Alex on August the 10th. First thing we need to mention is that this week Jodie Whittaker on Monday did a very in-depth interview on Radio 6, which is a radio station in the UK, discussing her whole feelings about getting the Doctor Who role and how much secrecy involved. She was also discussing the new drama she's in on BBC One on Tuesday night. It's called Trust Me, which is where she's also playing a doctor. Jodie has also given her feelings on the way that her initial costume, which might not be her eventual costume, has gone down in the whole cosplay world. She was interviewed by BBC's media correspondent, Lizzo Lisimbo. Also announced as an upcoming event, hopefully, is an animated version of Sharda, with Tom Baker redoing all his lines as an animation. This should be a very interesting. There has been no release date scheduled for it yet, but I expect it will be upcoming. From BigFinish.com, the major release from them tomorrow is Torchwood Season 5, Aliens Among Us Volume 1. This is Season 5, which is continuing straight after Miracle Day. So it has been conceived by Russell T. Davis with the great Scott Hancock from Big Finish, and contains Eve Miles and John Barrowman, plus new characters. It's one of four volumes which are coming out from now on over the next couple of years at BigFinish.com. Let's have a look at the covers. Were you saying, Mike, that there are like three different ones for this one?
Yes, Al. All the most regular big hitters, the big hitting artists of the Target range, had a go at this Web of Fear cover. 1976 original publication, cover by Chris Achilleos. Very well detailed picture of Patrick Troughton's Doctor, a very prominent web behind him, the Yeti with the purple rays coming out of its eyes, beaming towards Sergeant Arnold, which I've only just thought about now, slightly gives away a plot point, doesn't it? The fact it's Sergeant Arnold on the cover, but a very excellent one by Chris Achilleos again, Al.
That is the one I think I was thinking of. That is a really nice cover. But it's probably one of the first ones I actually saw and read, so I did remember it a minute ago. And that does, it's a bit of a spoiler, though, because that sort of tells you a lot on the cover.
Yeah, I literally only just thought of that. So, a reprint in 1981 featured a... I'll just check. I think it is an Andrew Skilleter cover this time.
Ooh, just as good.
Yeah, red Doctor Who Davison logo this time. White bordering. White bordering, white and the web of fear, Terence Dicks underneath. The Yeti just very prominent on this cover. White beams coming out of its eyes. The TARDIS stuck in a strange sort of web that almost makes it look as though it's against waves in the sea. Perhaps not a huge fan of that one. No Doctor on the cover. I presume it's the era when they were having difficulties with that.
Yeah, I think so. It must be on that period. I still prefer the first one. It tells you a lot more, I think.
And then Alistair Pearson had a go at a cover in 1993, a second reprint. The Sylvester McCoy logo and the sort of strange black ribbon banner. A picture of Patrick Troughton with a look of shock on his face. A black Yeti next to him, all set within a tunnel shape, so that obviously gives the idea of the London Underground. Terence Dicks in white. Certainly the last two, I think, not as striking as the first one for me, Al. I think the first one probably does win it hands down for me by Chris Achilleos.
I think the one I actually read must have been the Chris Achilleos, because that is the best one, I think.
And that's pretty well recreated on the new BBC audio release, folks. Stay tuned, we'll have...
That is the one on the DVD box. It's on the audio release set.
Yes, on the audio release set as well. Stay tuned, we're going to give you a chance with a competition question to win a copy of this at the end of the podcast.
So, what do you think of your overall thoughts on the book, the audiobook, and the DVD, Mike?
You brought up certain things, Al. Yes, I did thoroughly enjoy it at the time. Looking at how it's layered, I think the fact we've looked at it now, there are a lot of characters involved. Perhaps the plot is a little bit stretched, even in the book format. But as you also said, I preferred the audiobook and novelisation to the original TV version. So glad the TV version is 5/6 complete and back with us now. I'm going to say a pretty solid 8, I think, Al. An enjoyable one, certainly worth a purchase and worth entering our competition at the end of the episode for.
I'd probably go quite close, because I did enjoy the audiobook and I enjoyed the book, and I think it's great that we've got all the episodes not completely back, we've got them in some form so we can see them. I just think, like you, that the plot may have been a bit stretched out in the TV. I think you needed a little bit more to keep it going for 6 episodes. I think that's because we're now used to the straight in 45 minute episode things, I think. But overall, I thought the book was good fun, and it's got some good action scenes with Terence Dicks, that's all very well. But I did have a slight feeling this wasn't one of his greatest, but I still think it's good. You've got some great characters, and you've got the great development, you know, of having, you know, first, you know, Brigadier there, well, the corporal in this, what you know, later being the Brigadier. So yeah, I think it does have merit. It's an enjoyable listen, so I'd probably give it a 7.5, I think.
Yes, you must speak a little bit more. We've almost forgotten, Al, about the audiobook and David Troughton's performance. Eerily reminiscent of his father at times, I think. You could almost really feel Patrick was reading this book.
Oh, most definitely. It is a really good audiobook by David Troughton. There are bits where you honestly, you would think what Patrick Troughton was in the room when he's doing the Doctor, and the Jamie performance is very good, and even the women are very good. He does very good women, so overall, it's a very good listen and a good soundscape. Again, they seem to be getting the soundscape really well these days on the new audiobook, so it's definitely worth winning or buying it because it's very good.
Yes, soundscape wise. They didn't overdo it. I was sort of concerned beforehand. I thought they might go for echo throughout and lots of sort of clunky footsteps in the underground, but they did manage the balance very well.
Almost definitely. I think there was a definite nice balance. Not too much, because like you, I thought it was going to be echoey and trained and sort of, you know, it just works well. There's a nice balance. You do get some good Yeti noises as well.
Yes, and this was previewed in the current Doctor Who magazine. Which number was that issue? Issue 515. 515. And Simon Power who is... I shall just find his role again at... At BBC Audio. Simon Power is the sound designer, and he mentions in that article, in that preview, that it's an absolute gift for a sound designer. The long flights of stone steps and the high-pitched whine of electricity as it courses through the stations. The cranky old PA systems spitting out their messages, and the fusty, dank atmosphere of the cavernous, echoey tunnels. Yeah, I think he captures all those very well.
Oh, most definitely. It feels very sort of, you know, compact and sort of lovely bits of down the tunnels, and that's what I think keeps it scary, really.
Absolutely, yeah. So certainly a recommended one, Al, and I was just thinking of a question, really. Do you want to ask the question of our listeners who can... leave their answers, and we shall pick one at random on the Facebook page or the Twitter page of Doctor Who Target Files, folks. What was the question going to be, Al? What should we go for?
I know, I'm just thinking of a good one, which is quite not too difficult, because it's,
there's a link between this story and the 2013 Christmas special, The Snowmen, or was it The Snowman? You know the one I mean, folks.
Yeah, I don't know which one you mean. Yeah, that's a good
idea. What is the link? What is the link between Doctor Who and the Web of Fear and 2013 Christmas special, The Snowmen? So let us know, folks.
Are we going to be fussy? Or do they just have to get the link, or do they have to get the actor as well?
No, it's more of a link of not necessarily an actor, you know, but something within those two stories.
Yeah, so it's, there is a definite connection.
Something very, very big and clever. Oh, no, I won't give you any more ideas, folks. But let us know. Handle on Twitter, at DW Target Files, or Facebook, Doctor Who Target Files podcast page, and leave your answer there.
We shall pick one at random.
Yes, Al, excellent. And how have you been getting on in the world of Doctor Who news otherwise this week? Were you thrilled like me to see Jodie meeting fans for the first time and being interviewed about this new Trust Me drama she's in on BBC One, which has started this week?
Yeah, it's been another interesting week, definitely, on the whole sort of what people still think about her, and the fact that, you know, she doesn't seem to be taking any of the nastiness on board, thank God, and it's like she just seems to be loving it, and I think she'll going to be brilliant. We had the whole, you know, thing of her, you know, things, other things coming about, you know, her first person was David Tennant, apparently she phoned about what do I do, and then Chris Eccleston's finally come out this week saying what he thinks, hasn't he, and said it's all great, and I think it will be fine. I think, you know, a lot of people are still going, oh no, it's a woman, can't be a woman, and I know for some peculiar reason Nick Briggs, that big finish on their podcast, thought it was a bit weird why they hadn't said anything. He went, no, it's fine. It's a woman. Get used to it, basically.
Absolutely fantastic. And I think, as Eccleston would say, she is going to be fantastic. Slowly falling even more in love with her as well. This beautiful smile she has, you know. But you always have that issue when the previous Doctor is departing, how much attachment has now grown towards Peter. And going to be sad to see him go, but... Jodie just seems so enthusiastic and really so up for this role that, you know, we all want it to be a great success. We want Chibnall to get, you know, the scripts right on track from day one, and her to give great performances, great guest stars, great music, hopefully a newer version of the theme tune, new titles. Please just be excellent when it starts, probably about a year from now, folks.
Yeah, it probably won't be till August, unless it's in the Easter slot, because we've got the World Cup next year, so I expect it will be in the August slot of next year, basically. And it just looks great, and it'll be just great to have something completely fresh with new credits and new music. Did you see that thing on what's gone up on YouTube, which is basically credits with her, but it still has the old music, which I didn't think worked very well?
The cat strangling music, yeah.
Yeah, it's like her involved in the credits, but it's still the Capaldi music. It needs to be completely fresh, I think.
Well, didn't a fan get the job last time by mocking up some titles for Capaldi? I think they got the actual job then, didn't they, of creating the titles?
Oh, did they? Because the titles were quite fun, but it still had the Capaldi music over the top.
Just a slight amendment, folks, to the question asked earlier. For your chance to win a copy of the newly released audiobook, of the Web of Fear answer the following question. What links the Web of Fear with the 2012 Christmas special, The Snowmen? Answers can be directed to Twitter at DW Target Files handle or posted on the Facebook Doctor Who Target Files podcast page. Thanks for listening.
Next time on the Target Files, we will be discussing Doctor Who The Demons, book written by Terence Dix and audiobook read by Barry Letts.
Doctor Who Target Files. Doctor Who and the Web of Fear review featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. The Web of Fear suite, originally composed through stock music from Martin Slavin and Bela Bartok. Newsround, opening and closing themes, composed originally by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and by John Baker. 12th Doctor theme, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for this podcast by Vale Mystery, V-A-Y-L-E Mystery. Please check out their channel on YouTube. Doctor Who Target Files, Doctor Who and the Web of Fear review was recorded in Exeter, Devon, England and Swansea, Wales, UK during August 2017.